What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured. Not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
This summer, click into cordless power with Memorial Day savings at the Home Depot. Tackle more than half an acre of grass with the convenience and gas-like power of the Ryobi 40-volt battery-powered mower. And keep your flower beds looking fresh with the 40-volt cordless string trimmer. Then clear leaves and debris with the 40-volt leaf blower. No cords, no gas, no hassle. Click into Memorial Day savings happening now at the Home Depot and on homedepot.com. How doers get more done.
What does every grocery store aisle now have in common? Products that come in paper packaging. And we don't just mean the obvious ones like cereal boxes and juice cartons. From beauty products to boxed water, there are more opportunities to go papertarian than ever before. So why should you? Because paper comes from a renewable resource and can be recycled up to 7 times. Simply put, it's the smart choice for the environment. And it turns out, the easiest choice for you. Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian.
When you have health insurance, it's easy to forget about your out-of-pocket costs. That can be a lot of money. But are your bills accurate? It's estimated over 50% of medical bills contain errors. HealthLock can help. HealthLock technology securely connects with your insurance and flags any overbilling, wrong codes, and fraud. You can even have HealthLock work on your behalf to get money back from select past bills. To date, HealthLock has helped its members save over $130 million. To save, visit HealthLock.com today.
Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places. Welcome to Forward Thinking.
Hey there, and welcome to Forward Thinking, the podcast that looks at the future and says, Kitty McGee's in Dublin Town upon the crawl. I'm Jonathan Strickland.
I'm Lauren Vogelbaum.
And I'm Joe McCormick. And today...
Yes, Joe?
We're going to be talking about... The crawl.
We are talking about the crawl.
Not a pub crawl.
No, sadly not a pub crawl, which is what I was referring to in the lyric, but that is not what we're talking about today.
The crawl, what is that? Is that the name of a movie that was like a fantasy movie from the 80s?
Or it sounds like a castle horror
crawl.
Film.
I'm thinking crawl.
Oh yeah, that's a science Similar. Fiction fantasy film with a phenomenal one, I might add. It's a phenomenal science fiction fantasy film.
Okay, so why would we be talking about a crawl that's not a pub crawl and not a sci-fi fantasy movie?
And it's not the future of babies crawling.
Right.
No. It has something to do with the internet.
Yes, it has everything to do with the internet, in fact.
The web in particular,
yes,
actually.
Yes, yes.
And here's a funny little tidbit of information that you probably already knew, but you might be a little bit fuzzy on, wait, what's the difference between the web and the internet? Because when I say the internet, most of the time what I'm talking about is the place where people leave comments and argue about things.
Which would be the web, mostly.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
So internet is the network of networks of computers, right? So you've got all these different computer networks that then connect to a larger backbone that allow all these various networks to interact and communicate with one another. That is the internet. The World Wide Web is one thing that sits on top of this network of networks. Other things being email and FTP servers and other stuff that uses the internet as its method of transmitting data to and from different computers. But the World Wide Web is often what we think of with the internet because it is a very forward-facing part of the web, or the internet, rather.
Right. One way to think about the web is that it's a gigantic collection of interactive documents.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Some of those documents are very static. and they don't change frequently or at all. Mm-hmm.
Some of them are more like programs.
Or right. Sort of, yeah. Yeah. Some of them are more like whiteboards where, you know, stuff is being put up and taken down and put up and taken down constantly. Mm-hmm. So
some of them link to lots of other documents.
Yep.
And some do not.
Yep.
Some are applications.
Right. So you've got this massive number of documents. And when we say massive, it's hard to put it all into context. First of all, if you talk about all the information that we have created.
Not us, but humanity.
Humanity itself. Yeah, no, the three of us have done our share. But no, humanity overall, all the information that has been created. Well, back in 2012, that was estimated to be at 2.8 zettabytes.
That's not that much.
2.8 trillion gigabytes. Trillion gigabytes of data.
I think that's bigger than my hard drive.
Significantly so, yeah. If your hard drive can hold 2.8 zettabytes, I need to see your gaming rig, sir.
I think I've downloaded 2.8 zettabytes of pirated anime before.
Oh, I was going to say I have 2.8 zettabytes of Skyrim mods. But not all of this data is necessarily available for access on the web, right? This is just data that we have created. So let's narrow it down and look at the information that's actually on the web. So the web has between 10 billion and 1 trillion documents on it. Now, that's a huge range. But it tells you that it's hard to make an estimate about something that, one, is so big, and two, is rapidly evolving.
Right. There are always things being added to it and deleted from it.
Yeah. You have servers that go offline from the internet. If those servers had web pages on them, those, unless they've been mirrored onto other servers, are no longer accessible. They have left the web.
Mm-hmm, sure. Other people deleting their MySpace accounts.
Yeah. Why would you do that? Look. I have so few friends there, but so many awesome bands.
No, seriously, true moment. Does MySpace still exist?
Yes, it does. It's largely.
How recently did you check?
Probably, certainly not today.
Probably 8 months ago.
Yeah, it's up in the past year.
Yeah, because it's a music discovery site more than anything else now.
Oh, yeah, here we go. MySpace.com. Oh, it's breaking my browser. Hold on.
I was about to say, why did you go to that? You realize that MySpace is like the home of the autoplay music file, right?
Oh no, we just talked about how that's like my least favorite thing.
Well, let's not invoke the autoplay music gods. Yeah. Yeah. So the reason why we're even talking about how much information is on the web and how many documents there are out there is that the web, you can think of the web as representing the world's largest database of information. And that information spans every topic imaginable.
Yeah, and there's lots of great stuff out there that might be really relevant to you. It might have answers to questions that you have, or it might just be very interesting to you. But a strange question that you may never have considered is, how do I get the stuff that I want to get from the web? I mean,
right.
You know how you get it in practical terms. Well,
sure.
You go, you sit down at Google and you type in some terms. Or
first
you,
Google.
Yeah. Or you maybe have some kind of aggregator, like a friend on social media or some kind of thing.
RSS reader.
Or
maybe,
pulling content. Yeah.
Right. Or perhaps you have received the direct URL of a website that you wish to visit.
Yep. You might have one in particular in mind that you go to frequently.
Yeah,
and so,
yeah, like dinosaurcomics.com.
Oh, awesome. Good example. Yeah. So there are all these different ways, but let's say that you want to use the web to do something beyond just visiting a particular web page.
Right. If you know the URL, that's pretty simple.
Right.
But what if you're just trying to find something?
Yeah, it may be that
you don't even know what that thing is.
Or you know what that thing is, but nobody has gathered that and placed it into an easily digestible piece of information. So in other words, let's say that you're looking at some sort of statistical result that you want to know. You want to know the percentage of people who drove red cars in 2012 who ended up getting speeding tickets.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this sort of thing, like there may be a web page out there that has that specific answer on it, but there may not be. However, there may be the data out there that exists across multiple web pages in multiple places that could answer that question for you, but there's no easy way for the average person to be able to collect and collate all that data, analyze it, and get to a meaningful answer.
Especially not quickly, because if you wanted to go through the entire internet to try to find that information, it would take you a minute.
Yeah, it would take quite some time. So what we wanted to do is talk...
Quite some time.
Yeah. Well, again, depending upon what it is you're looking for, right? Because in some cases, you may have very little information, and it may take you some time just to make sure that the information that you do have is worthy of consideration. Or you may have the opposite problem. Let's say you want to look at anything that has to do with about cats. Good grief, you're going to have so much information on the internet, on the web that relates to cats that finding the, you know, separating the signal from the noise would take you a really long time. So
sure. And this problem is already has a solution, and that is why we are today talking about web crawlers.
Yeah. And web crawlers are something that have been around for about as long as the web has been around, because people realized early on that in order to make the web really user-friendly, especially once it grew beyond a collection of, you know,
three computers.
Right. Yeah. Three computers with 12 web pages all together. Once you get past all of that and you get to a point where it really is growing rapidly, you need a way to navigate through the web and find the stuff you're interested in.
You need an index.
Yeah, you have to have that index, because otherwise the only other option you have is to know the address of a particular web page and then to just follow whatever links that web page happens to have. And then once you hit a dead end, you got to backtrack, and you know, it's kind of like a choose your own adventure book, and it's a choose your own adventure book that isn't even connected to all the pages that you need, right? So indexing is a way of creating a means to find web pages about any given keyword, right? And again, this is a big, big job. You can't expect this to be something that only humans are doing under human power. It would take way too long. And it would be exhausting. So there have to be automated ways to index web pages.
Well, yeah. I mean, just consider the ridiculousness of the alternative. So let's say you are searching for a term, and that term is, lobster baseball. Somewhere out there, there might be a page about lobster baseball. But it would not be a good way to find it to say, well, I'm going to ping every web server in the world and see if it's offering any public pages that say lobster baseball on them.
Yeah, that would not, especially, you know, as the web grows and gets larger and larger and larger, that task becomes impossible. It would take your computer longer than your lifespan to complete the job, especially considering that, as we mentioned before, the web is constantly changing. So we would have new web servers joining while you're still doing this pinging operation, which means you just have, you know, you've added more that you have to ping before you're done. You never finish.
So what's the solution?
Well, web crawlers would be the solution, Joe. Web crawlers and search engines are our favorite things here at How Stuff Works. I mean, if it weren't for them, our jobs would be significantly more difficult.
Yes.
So let's say that you've got – all right, so to break it down, we've got web servers that have web pages on them, right?
Right.
That's a computer somewhere out there.
Yes.
It's got a public-facing document that it will show you if you ask for it.
Right. Mm-hmm. And your browser is the way that you ask for it, right?
Yeah.
So your browser is your conduit to getting the information that is stored on other computers that may be on completely different networks on another part of the world even. And the fact that you have a browser, that is what allows you to have the access to that document that exists on that other page. But those servers could have really funky names. The web pages may not have a title that is identical to what it is you're looking for, but the information may be in that page.
Sure. To use my prior example, dinosaurcomics.com used to be known only as quants.com.
Perfect
with
example.
With the QW, the way that you sometimes spell words.
Yeah, much. Yes, exactly.
The way
words are never spelled in English. My example in my notes I wrote was that let's say that you're looking for funny cat memes, and the funniest memes happen to be on a page that has the title, Things FDR Definitely Didn't Say. Well, the title of the page wouldn't tell you that there are cat memes on there. You would need something to have searched that page to understand what actually appears on that page, the context within which it appears, and to be able to serve that up to you. And that's really where the crawlers come in. They build out these indexes of words and where to find those words on the web. Like, they use pretty simple software. They are often referred to as either robots or spiders. And they're called spiders because they crawl the web.
That is Get too it. Good.
Get it.
Yeah. All right. So here's where we, mention that most of these terms.
So wait, are we the flies?
good question. I mean,
I think we're the hams. I'm not sure.
So here's where we mentioned that a lot of these terms were all invented around the same time. And boy, when we go with a metaphor, we just go whole spider. So so spiders typically start by traveling to web servers that have lots of traffic, the ones that are the most popular, and they explore the most popular web pages and start to build up the index of words of those web pages. Then all the links that are on those popular web pages, the spiders start to follow those links and index those pages in turn, and then do the same thing over and over and over again. So they just, you know, it is like a spider web or a crack in the glass where you see it splintering over and over while the glass shatters. Same sort of thing. It's following all those potential pathways, and they can hold hundreds of pages open at a time. We're talking like 300 pages a second. So
okay.
They're doing
more
this,
than I can do.
Yes. More than Google Chrome will allow me to have open before my computer says, listen, I give up. So depending on the crawler, the spiders will index these pages based upon which words appear in the page and where those words actually appear in that page, like in what context. So you may remember in the early days of the web before web search engines got really sophisticated, that some people would make a web page and then just litter the bottom of the page with tons of random words that were doing really well in search.
Mostly because they had ads served on the page of the type that they got money from per page view.
So I might have
Metallica, Britney Spears.
Right. Yeah, it would often be celebrity rumors and gossip, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And just random.
All on your creamed corn recipe.
Yeah. It'd be weird stuff. Like totally, some of it would be disturbing to read. You're like, wow, I can't believe that to know that this particular term is a very popular search term is disturbing. Others would just be.
Yeah, like Metallica.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm more of an AC/DC kind of guy myself, so I'm with you there. So anyway, this was a way of fooling search engines into indexing that page on multiple indexes so that it would appear no matter what search you put in, your page would pop up. You assuming you are the one who are administering this web page, you have no ethics. Like, you don't care if people come to your page and are completely disappointed because it has nothing to do with the search term they put in there.
You just want to get those sweet, sweet clicks.
You just need the page views because you need to pay the bills, right? So search engines and spiders got more sophisticated. So they were able to look for the placement of words, where it fell in the page, whether or not it appeared more than once within a page to understand if a page really was about that particular search term, mm-hmm. right? Or if it was just one of those things where the word happened to appear once, it may be a saying or a quote that has very little to do with the actual substance of the rest of the page. You know, this would help the search engine rank the page in search.
Right. So the final product of these spiders doing this indexing is called a crawl.
Yeah.
And it's essentially a lightweight copy of the World Wide Web.
Yep.
That's built to be much more easily searched than the whole web itself. And a crawl usually consists, therefore, of this huge cache of data about the web, including like the text of each page its spiders encountered, the code that constructed those pages, HTML or etc. And a certain amount of metadata. You know, certainly the page's URL and maybe the tags, as we discussed, that's not always as useful as it used to be due to scammy stuff. But yeah, so creating a crawl is a huge project in terms of time and computer equipment and drive space and spider programming and just sheer internet bandwidth.
Right. So for the longest time, this is something that was really only accessible by big corporations.
Yeah.
Like Google or Microsoft, Yahoo, that
like
kind of stuff.
Like that level.
Yeah, we're talking huge companies that have the computer power and the bandwidth to pull this sort of stuff off on a regular basis. And while those are incredibly useful for us as consumers, if we are looking for a specific piece of information that happens to live somewhere on a web page, if we want to do more of a big data analysis, something where we need to collate the information across multiple, perhaps hundreds or thousands of web pages, it's not easy, right? We don't have those tools for the most part.
Right. Because when you go to Google, you can't access that level of information. Yeah, you can ask, you know, what Hugh Grant was doing last week.
Right.
But
yeah, you can get the most popular or the highest ranking search results, which could give you at least some useful information. But again, if you want to do a widespread study on a specific thing, unless someone's already done it, in which case you may just need to replicate their study to make sure that it was correct, you're kind of out of luck. So where can someone turn? Let's say that it's a researcher who's working on something and they don't work for one of these big companies. Where can they turn to leverage the incredible asset that is the World Wide Web?
One Gil Elbaz started up a nonprofit corporation called the Common Crawl Foundation, and it has been since then working on providing publicly accessible free crawls to anyone who wants to use them. And Elbaz is a really interesting dude. A little bit of background on him. He co-founded a company back in the 90s called Applied Semantics, which created software that matched ads to web pages, like, contextually and automatically.
Oh, we know a little bit about that.
Yeah. This prompted Google to acquire them in 2003 for like $102 million. So not doing too bad for himself. Also, that's essentially the reason why Google AdSense exists. That is the programming that led to Google AdSense.
Yeah. So very, very practical application of that contextual understanding.
Right. In 2008, interestingly, and kind of a side note, he founded a company called Factual, which seeks to gather and analyze global location data in order to create a repository of really high quality, easily accessible location data that's factual. companies like Bing and Samsung and Yelp all use Factual's data to construct local maps and personalized advertising for mobile consumers. So pretty nifty stuff. And what I am saying is that Elbaz is passionate about and experienced with big data.
Right. And we've talked about it before on this podcast that big data is, you know, it sounds like one of those just buzz industry terms, but it really is one of those things that holds a huge amount of potential to affect our lives in different ways, assuming that we've developed the right means to analyze that massive amount of information that's
out
there.
And to collect it in the first place. Mm-hmm.
Sure. And once you have a way of processing, of collecting and being able to access and process vast amounts of data, you can do a lot of amazing things. Like big data and the ability to process it might be the key to, say, for example, computational modeling that predicts complex social phenomena.
Sure.
By analyzing big data coming from social media and from news and from weather and from all kinds of sources.
It could really mean that we are able to actually see elements of order in what previously appeared to be a truly chaotic system, which is kind of exciting.
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
And then on the other hand, a lot of people think that big data could be one of the ways that we finally achieve that next level of artificial intelligence by having machines sort of plumb the depths of this data with self-teaching and self-learning mechanisms.
Right. Well, let's get back to the common crawl.
Okay, right. So the foundation began compiling crawls back in 2008. The most recent one that they released as of this podcast at the end of May 2015 was from April 2015. It was some 168 terabits in size.
Terabytes.
Terabytes in size.
That's huge.
That's big. And contains some 2.1 billion web pages.
That's not that many, really.
You can do
better. I wrote 47 million web pages before breakfast. No, I did not. I did not do that.
I'm just kidding. No, that's a lot.
Yeah. It's a bunch.
But so they're continuously indexing and releasing new crawls.
Right. It's not like it's here's the internet and now we're done.
Yeah. They've been releasing a new crawl every month since July of 2014.
That's incredible. You think about the amount of work that does. It also means that you have like a time stamped like photograph of what the web was at that moment from these crawls.
Weird. Yeah. I hadn't thought about it quite that way before, but yeah, that's.
It's kind of, you know, it's things that may not exist from one month to the next, you could actually see and
watch those trends. Yeah. Oh, that's fascinating.
Yeah, I'd say one of the main ways that I often encounter web archives is when I'm trying to find evidence of something somebody did in the past that they wanted expunged
to go
and
away
erased.
Forever.
Right. This makes it sound like I'm some kind of detective. Not like I'm trying to find, but you know what I'm talking about.
No, I know.
People will post something and then they'll be like, oh, wait a minute. No, that was a bad idea.
I know
and then
if
they'll
you use,
try to delete it.
I know if you use archive.org, you can find one of the web pages I built way, way back when, and I never want anyone to ever see it. Because
right,
it was that bad.
But they will forever be able to.
Yeah, maybe you shouldn't talk about it on podcasts.
Pretty sure they're not going
to
be able to find it.
Tens of thousands of people.
Let me guess. You had a bunch of Rage Against the Machine lyrics, and it auto-played MIDIs.
You're so close.
Am I close?
Yeah. No, you're really far away. I made some web pages for a particular company I worked for. Which is, unless you know the company I worked for that I'm specifically referring to, that's why you're never going to find that particular web page. And you shouldn't. It's terrible. It was about
Lauren,
as bad as
we're going
to
find these. We go look on his LinkedIn profile. We can figure out what company it was.
I already found some Lobster Baseball stuff. So, yeah, we can.
That comes from – you almost got a spit take, Lauren. You almost got a legitimate spit take.
Drinking coffee.
And, that comes from a pre-episode conversation. No, that was actually in the episode, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I can't keep track anymore. All this Dungeons & Dragons saving throw talk we had earlier.
Okay, no, hold on. I've got a question.
Yes, Joe.
So hold on. If the common crawl is trying to preserve and make accessible continuously updated snapshots of the web.
Right,
huge
ones.
Where on earth are they going to like store that and make it available?
Right, because it's not going to fit on like a thumb drive. So where?
I think it's also funny that sort of becomes part of the web. Like the web now incorporates a snapshot of the previous web.
And so it just gets that much larger. So yeah, where is this stuff living?
It is all living on Amazon's web services. Specifically, it's stored in Amazon's Simple Storage Service, or S3 as it is sometimes known. Mm-hmm. And you can analyze it via Amazon's Elastic Compute Cloud, or EC2. And this is so cool, guys, because given Amazon's web service scope, it means that practically anyone in the whole world can download entire crawls for free, or can, if they don't want to, you know, use 168 terabytes of space, they can just use EC2 to really easily run simple data crunches for like an hourly charge, like anywhere from a few bucks to maybe $50 for pretty simple computations.
Mm-hmm.
So, and of course, more savvy users can write their own code to investigate stuff with. But for the common user, mm-hmm. this is revolutionary.
Yeah, to me, this is. Obviously, I would recommend doing the approach where you're searching on Amazon stuff. I can't imagine the phone call you would get from your internet service provider. I see you're trying to download 168 terabytes worth of data over our lines. You have gone significantly over your bandwidth cap.
Yeah. And they can do all of this because Amazon has specifically chosen to waive their storage fees for this and a handful of other things that they consider to be of wide public interest, like weather and census data.
And that's incredible, right? Yeah. I mean, because you are talking about a significantly huge amount of data. So to say, you know, this is so important and so potentially beneficial to mankind that we're not going to end up, you know, charging these storage fees for it. That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very, very encouraging. So when we get down to, all right, well, what can you actually use all that data for? Well, just think about the stuff that's on the web and pretty much anything you could think of that, you know, a question you might have that could not be answered through a simple search query, you could potentially answer by leveraging this information. So, you know, we're talking about everything from lots of stuff that deals with AI, actually, like you were mentioning earlier, Joe.
Yeah.
Stuff like developing better natural language algorithms so that the machines of the future can understand a wider variety of inputs and make meaningful connections between that input and the desired output. So in other words, I could talk to my computer or my phone as if it were a person, and no matter how I might word things in my own quirky way, the machine understands what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not responding to what I say it's more responding to what I mean, which would be awesome. Also, stuff like speech recognition, emerging global trends. We mentioned that. You know, let's say that you wanted to track the outbreak of a disease and to try and get at, you know, where did this start? How can we prevent this from happening again? That kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
That can be really useful. And sometimes you're tracking this through not like official documents.
Oh, sure, but through you know, people on Twitter saying, "Oh, I have the flu."
Right. Yeah, it might be social media, it could be news reports.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it could be all these different completely separate pieces that would be way too hard for you to put together on your own.
Sure. We did a whole episode once about financial purposes for big data.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So playing the stock markets and all that. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So this is really important stuff. And we're going to see a lot more of examples of people leveraging big data, especially now that it's outside the realm of just mega corporations, right? Where we can see people or researchers who have interest in all sorts of different fields taking advantage of this massive amount of information that we continue to accumulate day after day. And that's really exciting. It makes me think of having access to the best research librarians in the world all boiled into the largest library you can imagine. That's essentially what we're talking about here. So very exciting, and the Common Crawl is pretty inspirational. It's one of those things where you realize it took a lot of determination to make that become a reality, and the potential benefit. And it also is incredibly forward-thinking.
Oh, yeah.
To be all the way back in, 2008 and putting this together. And that was before we had really developed sophisticated tools that could leverage it properly. Now we're getting to see that as big data has become an industry unto itself. I mean, it's really exciting now. So thank goodness that the idea was implemented long ago enough for it to actually have, an established presence. And now we can really see how we can take advantage of it.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
totally. And Elbaz is such a fascinating dude. I found so many interesting interviews and stuff with him. I think that we should maybe not on this show, but maybe if you'd want to do a tech stuff episode
kind of focus on him.
Yeah,
that would be kind of cool. Yeah, I love to do episodes where we are able to look at influential figures in technology on that show. So that would be fantastic. I will add that to the list. So the Common Crawl is really an interesting project. If you have not looked into it, go check it out. You know, because it may be one of those things that could come in handy if you're working on a research project, if you are just curious about how big data is going to continue to have a huge impact in our lives. go seek that out.
Yeah, it's you can find them at commoncrawl.org.
Yep.
And if you're into making donations to nonprofit organizations that are tax deductible, you can do that thing too.
That's pretty cool. All right, guys, that wraps up this discussion. If you have any suggestions for future topics for Forward Thinking, you should let us know. Send us an email. That address is fwthinking@howstuffworks.com, or drop us a line on Facebook, Twitter, or Google Plus. At Twitter and Google Plus, we are FW Thinking. Just search FW Thinking in Facebook and we will pop right up. Leave us a message. We read all of them. We look forward to hearing from you, and you'll hear from us again really soon.
For more on this topic and the future of technology, visit forwardthinking.com. Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables. Ooh, yum. And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notified, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
Tired of restless nights? At Leesa, we know good sleep is essential for mental, physical, and emotional health. From memory foam mattresses to hybrids that keep you cool all night long, Leesa's mattresses offer exceptional comfort and support with free delivery and 100 nights to try out your mattress in the comfort of your home. For a limited time, save up to $700 off select mattresses plus two free pillows. Go to leesa.com/iHeart for an additional $50 off mattresses and select goods. Exclusions apply. See leesa.com for more details.
With the new Dexcom G7, you can achieve better diabetes results without painful fingersticks. It sends your glucose numbers to your compatible phone or watch so you can always see where you are and where you're heading. See how food and exercise affects your glucose, making it easier to spend more time in range and lower your A1C. Take more control of your diabetes with the number one recommended CGM brand. It's easy to get started today at Dexcom.com. That's Dexcom.com.
Dexcom data on file 2023. If your glucose alerts and readings from the G7 do not match symptoms or expectations, use a blood glucose meter to make diabetes treatment decisions. For a list of compatible devices, visit Dexcom.com/compatibility.